أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي. So today is module 5, thriving in money relationships. The philanthropist. So alhamdulillah rabbil alamin that we've gotten this far. What we'll be focusing on is relationships. We've talked before about how we relate with money interpersonally, as I mean, with ourselves and money, right? So we're going to go into this a bit further, trying to determine our money personalities. So everybody has a money personality. We may have some that one may be very dominant and then one not so dominant. So you could actually have two money personalities, like a very, very strong one and one that is not that strong. So what's the money personality? It's basically a summation of your habits, our habits and our relationship with money. So there are categorized, there are five major categories, and I adapted this from themoneycouple.com. The risk taker, the spender, the saver, the security seeker or hoarder, the flyer or the avoider. So I'm going to go into this one after the other. So we remember that our habits around money is actually something that's happened from how we saw money when we were growing up, the things that were modeled around us regarding money and all that. So all this, you know, determine how we relate with money. Just a minute, let me shut this door. Okay, just a minute. I'm trying to shut the door because I can hear I can have my family in the background. Okay, I think it's quiet enough. Okay, so your money personality. So as we go through this five, try to look at it and try and figure out which one is yours. You could be able to figure out which one is really dominant with you and then which one is, you know, less dominant. So let's hit it. So the risk taker. Usually entrepreneurs, visionaries are risk takers. They put every very easily end up as billionaires and very easily bankrupt as well. They love nature. Love adventure. And, you know, it's really the thrill of chasing that money, that, you know, that next risky adventure and all that, that really keeps them, you know, on it. It's not really how much they make at the end of the day. And I actually know someone that is a risk taker, a very well-known one to everybody in my family, and he's my husband. So it's interesting that we'll come to that later when we're talking about relationships generally around money. So which are you? Are you a risk taker? Then a spender. A spender just spends. Gets the money and spends it. There's really no thinking around it. When the money comes, just spends it. You know, there's this high feeling, a feeling of coolness and being high that comes with spending money. And the thing is that it's not just about spending money for herself. It's also giving people money, gifting people money, or just spending the money. Whatever it is, whether it's a lot of money she has at that point in time or very little money, all she wants to do is to spend. Then we've got the saver. The saver loves to save money. Saves, saves, and saves. Is always looking out for a good deal. Whether she has money or she doesn't have money, all she wants to do is to save. You know, pinching pennies here and there. Always finding a way to, oh, I got a deal. I bought 5 for the price of 2. I bought, you know, everything. She's the kind of person that will clip coupons, you know, get all those coupons off things because she wants to save money on it. She's the one that will go into joint purchases with people because, oh, when you buy as a group, you know, you get a discount or whatever. Saving in all kinds of manner. And the thing about the saver is that it's not really about saving for a particular goal. It's just about, I just like saving, and I feel good when I save. And when I help other people save too, I feel good. So that's what the saver is all about. So are you a saver? So the next one is the security seeker. The security seeker is always thinking about the future. The future, everything. You know, everything in the future. The security seeker, you know, plans, finances. Okay, I need to put away XYZ amount of money so that by so and so time it will have accrued to this amount and it will be able to do this payment for me or do this for me. When I retire, I would have this amount of money stashed up. You know, it's always looking to the future, looking to the future. And the thing about the security security may actually not really enjoy the moment, enjoy spending, having money now, because she's always thinking about the future. How am I going to save? What am I going to save? It's always about the future because it makes them feel secure. And then you have the avoider, the flyer. The flyer is just clueless and doesn't want to talk about money, doesn't want to think about money, doesn't even hoot about money. The avoider really just does, I mean, does just that, avoids money, doesn't want to have anything to do with money. So it's just like, you know, the ostrich, the proverbial ostrich with head in the sand. The thing about the avoider is that anything can happen and then the whole bubble is burst and then, you know, things happen. So looking at these, right, I'm sure you'll be able to see yourself in maybe one or two of these. So we find that being able to know where you are is key to how you relate with other people. Because for other people, you would also need to understand what kind of money personality they are. So when you are able to understand the kind of money personality they are, then you can step into their shoes and for a bit see things from their perspective. So that's the key to understanding these money personalities. So the next thing we're going to do is to just look at, these are a lot of quotes from Hadith and Quran and all that about money rights and responsibilities as Muslims. So the first component, this part of this class really relates more with the marriage relationship. So for those that are in marriages, and then for if we're not in a marriage, we'll find that it also serves as a guide to even those that are basically our dependents, or those that are our dependents or those that we depend on for, you know, for our daily needs, you understand? So the thing about it is that Islam gives us guidelines, right? It gives us a large playing field, as it were, to do things within. So for everybody, depending on the kind of relationship we have with another person, they have regulations and guidelines that they're supposed to follow. So the first one we have here is basically regarding the man. The man. So meaning the man could actually be the husband, and it could also be the father, in the sense that, of course, for some of us women, we may still be living with our fathers, and our fathers are financially responsible for us, as it has been said, as in the Hadith and the Quran. So if we look at these, let's just run through it. We'll see that it's the financial support that a husband is supposed to give to his family is supposed to be based on his financial capacity. And it's supposed to only to basically cover food, clothing, housing, and other basic needs. So the rest of it really is not like it must be done. And of course, it's expected that a man should be financially self-sufficient and independent in order to provide for his wife and his family. It's expected that a man should be financially independent. So the thing about this point is that in relationships, we find that a lot of divorces happen because of financial issues. And it's really about lack of a shared understanding on the rights and responsibilities, on the money personalities, on having a good foundation on how you relate in respect to money in that relationship. So having this information serves as a foundation that can build with, built on. So a man spending on his wife and family is charity for him. Then the man's first concern should be to sufficiently provide for his wives and family even before giving money for a last course. When a man restricts or denies financial support, a wife is justified to take without the husband's permission a portion of his money that would satisfy her and the children. Then it's a sin for a man to neglect appropriately supporting his wife and dependents. So all these, you'll find within it what the benefit a man gets from taking his responsibility as a father and as a husband, or as the head of the family. It's charity for him. So it's a way to even encourage a man that isn't doing what he needs to do. So the other part of it is relating to us women. A wife is expected to show gratitude to her husband to gain Allah's mercy. Just like Khadija being Khuwailid. She was wealthier than Rasulullah, but she wasn't arrogant she wasn't ungrateful to him. He married her knowing that she was wealthier, and he was okay with it. And they lived, you know, comfortably in that manner. And then a wife must safeguard or care for her husband's property, whether in his absence or in his presence. A wife shouldn't give out anything of her husband's possession, including food, without his permission or implicit consent, even if it's for charity. Then a wife receives half the reward of giving her husband's money or property in charity, knowing he won't object. He gets the other half. Well, the context of this hadith is that they both get rewarded without each person's reward diminishing the other person's, because each has done good and they will get their reward in full. And then a woman has the full right to ownership of property, and her husband has no right whatsoever to take it from her, including her jewelry, her dowry, her clothing, without her permission. So the thing is that if we know what Islam has given us in terms of our rights to money and in terms of the responsibility we have towards someone that provides to us or towards our own finances, and because look at this, Allah has said a woman has the full right to ownership of her property. So which means that a woman is 100% responsible for her finances in totality. So if we are not living up to this, then it means that we have not accepted what Allah, the beautiful rights that Allah has given us. We should embrace it. We need to embrace it and play it full out. So going on to the relationships. Money in relationships is always a lot of friction for majority of people. And these relationships actually go beyond family relationships. It goes beyond the spouses. It could be between siblings. It could be between extended family members. It could be between employees and employer. It could be within even volunteers in an organization that has to do with maybe funding one charity or the other. Relationships generally. Money usually is a cause of friction, but that is because of the discomfort that a lot of us carry around money. But alhamdulillah, I know that by now we are dropping and we are redrawing and transforming our money maps. So the issues we're having are actually falling away. So what happens is that people really are adverse to talking about money. And when they do, it creates a lot of high emotions. You know, they feel, you know, agitated. they feel, then eventually, you know, there's fear, there's anxiety, there's anger, there's distrust. So the thing about money in relationships is that what you have to manage in that relationship is that person's, the other person's money personality. You have your own money personality, which you are constantly working on improving. But one thing that I will say to you is that you cannot change another person's money personality. You can understand it. You can empathize with it. Then you find a middle ground to live with it. Find a middle ground to live with it. So what do we do? There's something that I call, it's actually something, a concept that, you know, has been existing for a very long time. Money conversations. So what money conversations is basically, generally, I do know that I have put this in the context of a marriage, you know, of spouses. But what money conversations is generally is actually seeking to bring the parties that have conflicts in their relationship because of money. It's not really because of the money, because money is really neutral, but because of their own perspective about money, their own background about money, their own perception about money, their own personal relationship with money. So all this needs a money conversation to bring everything, to a level playing ground, such that each party seeks to understand each other and know where they're playing from. So a money conversation is something that is very critical to any relationship that involves money. It's an opportunity to get on the same page. So in a marriage, if one always finds that there is always friction when talking about money, maybe it's a case of how could you have spent so much on, you know, this amount of money, or it's even a situation where the conversations, they're not even talking about money actually, but they are reacting. For instance, I know that in the past when I still had issues around money, and my husband is a risk taker, right? And I am the entire opposite. I would say that I move towards, one of my money personalities move towards being a security seeker, right? And maybe at some point in my life, I probably was an avoider. Yeah. So the thing is that he's a risk taker. He still is a risk taker, and he thrives. He loves it. And now I support him fully. It's fine with him. And it's okay with me too, because I've learned to see from his own shoes. And we have come to a place where it's comfortable for both of us, you know? So at that time, when I see their voids, maybe something hasn't been done in the house, and I take, you know, money that I'm supposed to be using for either one savings or the other, one investment, I put into the family, maybe housekeeping expenses or whatever. And then he comes and says, oh, see, I want to shop for this, and I got this and this and this. And then I feel so resentful. A lot of times I may not say anything about it, but I would react, because I may clam up and then, you know, start just reacting negatively. And he wouldn't even know what it is. You know, men are like that. If you don't tell them something in clear black and white, they don't even understand what you're saying. So these are the things that you can use a money conversation to resolve. So the thing is that if you've never had the opportunity of doing this in your relationships, then it deserves a lot of planning, such that you very casually, you have initially, you know, picked your spouse's brain on, you know, what their background was like, what they think about money, you know, the way you have come to a new understanding of your own relationship with money, you would use a similar process to try and discern how they feel about money. So you might actually take it further and make a date out of it, you know, find somewhere cozy, no distractions, actually plan it, and then, you know, drop all the emotional baggage, you know, and then have a time frame, half an hour, It shouldn't be more than that, because it's not supposed to be something difficult. It's supposed to be something casual. And then the first time you're having this money conversation, all you really want to do is just to find out about your spouse's money background. You know, be curious, no judgment. And then try and find what is this person's money personality. You could also do it for, if you have a partner in business and you're having these kind of conflicts in your business relationship because of, you know, all these baggage around money. You could also do this money conversation. You could have the money conversations to try and resolve it. And then in your subsequent money conversations, after you've already elicited, you know, the person's background and all that, then you can now bring up the feelings you have about the money issues. Like for me, when I had this conversation with my husband, you know, years back, I actually tell him, you know, how I felt so uncomfortable when he just takes every single thing he has and puts it in an investment. And he tells me that, see, I'll take the risk. You know, he tells it, and then he's done it and then lost a lot of money. And I tell him that, I had to tell him that, see, when you do this, it makes me feel very uncomfortable. I am, you know, I feel really, really uncomfortable. I'm afraid. I want to, you know, I worry. You know, I told him all these things that happened. And he told me that, see, I enjoy doing this kind of things, and I do it because that's just me. And I of course, I asked him about, you know, his background and my money and all that, and he let me know, and it made me understand him better. And it made me now know the fact that I really didn't need to do all these worrying about him, because he's an adult. So the thing we needed to agree on was the fact that, okay, because you needed to take care of the home front, how are we going to do this without you put in everything in that risky investment? Even we're going to put everything in that risky investment, ensure that you've taken care of the home front. So when you do that, then I know that I don't need to worry, you know, and, you know, we're able to come to all those agreements. So before you actually have that conversation anyway, you need to preframe the fact that you are both sharing to reach a common goal. No accusations, no blame, no emotions. You know, it's really about two friends speaking to each other. And I'll have to say some caveat here. If you already do have a good rapport with your husband or with whoever it is you want to have this money conversation with, then it will be easy to set this up. But if you do not have a rapport, a good rapport, you will need to work on the rapport before you can actually set up the first kind of money conversation for it to actually have the kind of effect and to be effective as you want it to be. So basically, that's it for today. What you need to do, yeah, is to go to, there's this link in here, yeah. There's a personality assessment that I'd like you all to do. You, during the class, I'm sure you've been able to figure out, oh, I think I'm an avoider, or I think I'm a spender, or I think I'm a saver. But then, if you do it here, it's a free assessment, you would be able to really find the, you're going to be able to hit it on the nail. Yeah, is that it? Hit the nail on the head, right? Okay, anyhow. And then, another thing is that, okay, you need to like determine what money conversations you need to have, plan it and carry it out. You know, we have a break before the next session, inshallah. Remember, the money conversation is not just about your spouse. It could be your business partner. It could be a partner in a project you're doing. It could even be your children. Because we find that sometimes as parents, you know, with children that are growing up, we find that we indulge them. We indulge them. So when you realize this and you know that, see, indulging this child is not going to help this child become financially responsible. You know, a child should, at a certain age, should know that, oh, when I need something, if it's a want, I need to work for it. My parents do not have to provide it. So once they have provided my needs, they don't have to provide my want. So I have an opportunity of working for it and making money to do it, to earn it. So if we have been having these kind of issues, for instance, our kids could actually even be those we're going to be having these money conversations about. And then there's a document that is in the resource area It's the Financial Fidelity Blueprint, 7 Steps to Marital Money Bliss. This is a document that will give a bit more insight, especially when in a relationship there is already a lot of, you know, anxiety and, you know, things are not really going well regards money in the relationship, then it will give more insight into how to resolve it. So, mashallah, this is the end of our session for now. Subhanaka Allahumma wa bihamdik. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta. Astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. So, I want your questions and your takeaways. So, let's see what we have. Okay. So, okay, so this is, okay, so who wants to go first? Who wants to share takeaways, any questions? Okay, I'm just, oh, okay. And the question is very, very nice. Oh, mashallah. Okay, so Khadija, do you want to share? I see, I just saw what you posted in here.
Yes, the questions that you asked, you know, that you had to complete to say money means this to me or whatever. I asked my husband, and he actually has quite, I think, a different outlook compared to me in his relationship with money. We, I think, quite opposites in our personalities, and it would be interesting to do the quiz to see actually what it is. I think I'm also a little bit of a security person as well, and also a saver. So it looks like that at the moment. So it will be interesting to see the difference in personality. I never actually thought that of somebody having a money personality. This is the first time I heard of it. So it's very interesting.
MashaAllah. Oh, mashallah, that's very good. So you're basically like, we're like a step ahead of a class, in the sense that you already realized that, wow, I'm feeling this way, then probably it's a different thing for, I'm really happy you went ahead and did this. So yes, it will be good to also get our partners or whoever it is that we have these money relationships with to also do the assessment. You know, if they're willing, I mean, it's good also because it makes everybody, in fact, it will be something really very interesting, you know, when we see why or how we perceive things. In fact, it's something to actually laugh about. I remember that when I was exploring all these things with my husband, you know, sometimes when he said something, I'm like, oh, really? And it just makes me laugh that, oh, no wonder you're like this and you're like that. It even brings a lot more fun into the relationship. And it makes us understand really why we do the things the way we do. Mashallah, thank you so much for sharing. Is there any other thing you want to share? Do you have a question? Okay, mashallah. Okay, then. Where's the young man over there? Assalamu alaikum. Okay, so who wants to go? So who wants to go next? Sataiba, do you want to go next? You look frozen. Are you there at all? Assalamu alaikum. I think not. Okay, Samaya, would you go next? So what are your takeaways? How are you going to use the new information you've learned? Then you have any questions? Okay, for some reason I can't unmute you. I don't know why. Samaya, are you there? Okay.
Assalamu alaikum. Yeah. I'm now eager to do the money personality, but I feel I'm a spender and a little bit of security seeker too.
Okay, mashallah.
Let's
okay.
See.
Okay, great. So how do you think it's going to play out? Do you have any idea of you know, what maybe, like, for instance, your husband, his own personality? Do you have an idea of what it's like?
Yeah, from the today's like class, I feel he's a risk taker.
Oh.
And security seeker also. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's possible. It's possible to have, just as I said, one could have a very dominant one, and then you have you know, one that is not so dominant, you know. So it's okay, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's really very, it's okay. It's very fine. Okay, so let's see. Do you have any question?
No.
Okay, mashallah. Okay, let's see if this lady is here now. Assalamu alaikum. Taiba, are you there? You are frozen and been talking and I was mute. Oh god. Okay. Okay, I'm going to assume that you didn't hear anything from when I started answering this question. So the question was, okay, can someone tell me did you hear me at all? Assalamu alaikum.
No, we didn't.
Okay, I was muted. Okay, so just go ahead and ask your question, then I'll answer it since you're already unmuted.
Oh, the question that I typed out.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Is the money personality inherited? Were you born with it, or is it learned behavior?
Okay, mashallah. Okay, so my response would be that Allah created us on the fitrah. You know, we're pure. We have the disposition to do good. We don't have, you know, we're just pure and we always want to good. We are innately good. So every behavior is learned. You know, our parents, in that particular, I don't know if it's a hadith or a Quran verse that, you know, says that it's our parents that make us wherever we be, in the sense that it's the environment, the society, how we grew up that makes us whatever we end up being. So it's learned. So if we go back to how it was learned, it's what did our parents do around money? What did our caregivers do? What did we see them doing? What did they say about money? What was their own relationships with money? What was, what did they model to us about money? What did we see about money? What significant emotional experiences did we have about money? Because all these things is what actually makes us learn it. And when we now learn it, we model whatever we see or we have learned. Another thing that could happen is that as we grow up through this journey of life, we may have an experience that, maybe touches up us in the wrong place. And then we have a perception about money and we start treating money in a certain way. So all in all, this becomes our money personality. So it's definitely learned. And as quickly as it was learned, it can be unlearned. So what it means is that if we find that we have a certain money personality that is really dominant, that may not serve us very well, then we have the opportunity of rewiring ourselves to improve it such that it serves us better. So does that answer your question?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, mashallah. That's really very good. So do we have any other questions in the house? Any other questions? Sister Taiba, are you there or not? There's just this frozen screen. Okay, Assalamu alaikum, are you there? Taiba, are you there? Sister Taiba? I don't think so. Okay, so Samaya, any questions?
No questions.
Okay, no questions. Okay, good. So what I want to do is to go back to, I want to touch a bit more on those money personalities again. Let's just look at the pros and cons of each one. I think it will help us, look at, I mean, none of it would be entirely bad, So let me go back to the slides. I'll share the slides again. So I just wanted to look at it again and then, so that we can use this to really work on. Okay, so let's look at the risk taker. So looking at the risk taker here, we can see that, okay, the only way you can actually do anything as an entrepreneur or as a visionary or visionary is by taking a risk. It's by taking a risk, right? Okay, before I continue, maybe I should answer Khadija's question. There's another question. And Khadija has a question here. She says, how do you have money and not be arrogant about it? Wow. That's a very, very strong question. That's a very strong question. My answer would be that first thing is to make dua. The first thing is to make dua. Because we can only try. Yeah? We can only try. We can only make effort. But everything lies in the hands of Allah. There's this dua. It's Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum Bi Rahmatika Astaghithu Astaghli Sha'ni Kallahu Ala
Ilahi
ila nafsi ila tarfata ayn. The dua is Ya Hayyu, I think the ever living Ya Qayyum, the eternal, with your mercy, I ask you for, I ask you to, it's like, okay, ask to be in charge of my affairs. Yes, to be in charge of all my affairs and not leave me to myself for even like the blink of an eye. You know, that's such a powerful dua. I'll look for the text and post it in there. The dua is, okay, the dua is, it's a very powerful dua, because it just, what it just, what does it mean? It's basically that we, of course, we strive to do good, but everything lies with Allah. Allah is the one that makes it easy for us to do everything. So the first thing, the very first thing, of course, is to be aware, to have that awareness that there's a possibility that one might have money and now become arrogant. And then there's that awareness of the fact that arrogance actually leads to the hellfire, because that was basically what happened to Iblis. And then we have examples of people that were wealthy and became arrogant, like Fir'aun and Qarun. Their arrogance is actually what put them in hellfire. They Allah blessed them with wealth and they became, you know, arrogant, and then they went astray. So the awareness is very key. And then secondly, of course, is the fact that you know that there's no power other than power of Allah. We can't do things by ourselves. We need the help of Allah. So we ask for Allah's help. And then the thing now is to guard ourselves. There was something I read recently about, it's just talking about the life of a Muslim and the fact that there was this this metaphor that was, that in fact there was a hadith of Rasulullah that said something about, he was asking one of the Sahaba that if you were in a place that had thorns, what would you do? You know, how would you behave in that place? And the Sahaba said, I would watch myself, you know, pull my clothes around me, watch my steps so that I do not get hurt by the thorns. So that is how it is. Since we know that with wealth, there's a possibility of arrogance. And by the way, the arrogance can come with everything that Allah has provided us. Remember that wealth is not just about money. Children, knowledge, good health, also everything is wealth. So particularly in regards to money, because of course, it's very easy for people to see when a person has money. Because in most cases, one's standards of living will change. So one of the things that one may do to help one actively protect oneself from arrogance is that one watches one's spending habits. Yes, we are expected to enjoy the good things of this world because Allah has put them there for ourselves, our sakes. So when we earn more money, what will be the first thing that we should spend more on? My take is that it should be charity. That should be the first thing. Remember that whatever we invest in the akhirah is really what belongs to us. Whatever we spend in the dunya is gone and gone forever. So if we make a habit of spending more on charity first, with all those guidelines we learned, then we would have less to spend on other things. However, you know, our spending habits also depend on where we are now. If, for instance, now we are a family of six and we're living in a small studio, we do know that when Allah blesses us with money, we would want to live in a bigger place because it makes it more convenient for everybody. It gives us the opportunity of separating the rooms of the boys and the girls. It gives us the opportunity of having space for even our worship. So definitely Allah has said we should spend on ourselves first before we spend on others. We shouldn't deprive ourselves of a need that we have been blessed to spend on. Because when we do that, we end up being like a miser. A miser that has money will keep it rather than spend on medical expenses for himself or herself. So yes, mashallah. Allah wants to see, yes, Khadija said, Allah wants to see his blessings on you. Yes. So yes, you spend, but we now have to draw the line between extravagance, you know, between being a spendthrift and spending on the things one requires. There's nothing wrong in buying, you know, the best handbag or, you know, the most durable device or whatever. There's nothing wrong with doing all that. However, one needs to draw that line between what is extravagance. Remember that I don't know, some years past, there was this person from the UAE that made, I think, a top, maybe a top or a trouser that was made entirely from gold. As in, it was made from gold, woven from gold. So you can imagine that. What is that if not extravagance, if not opulence? It's not a necessity. So one needs to look at what are one's needs, you know. For instance, if a person lives in maybe a place like my country here in Nigeria, and lives in the suburbs, you will find that what's available is a house that is, yeah, maybe tastefully finished and all that, but not necessarily finished with the best of materials. But that person is living there because that's what he can afford to pay right then. And then in that area, that might probably even be the house that's been finished in the best manner. So that person is like a king in that area. But when he comes into the city center, the person is almost like a pauper because the best houses are finished in, you know, whatever. So the thing is that necessity determines, can you help me pull off this? Necessity is not like cast in stone. It all depends in one's own situation. A person that is married and has 20 kids would have needs that are different from a person that is married. You know, maybe the guy that is married with four wives and has 20 kids, his needs definitely are different from a person that is married and has a wife. And apart from that, a person that lives in a village setting with a large family may actually even not have the kind of needs that somebody that lives in the city center with one wife and two kids have, because the expenses in those two areas are definitely different. So we know that it's a lot of looking at ourselves and knowing within ourselves. We know the truth within ourselves. What is the line between our needs and our wants? And then another thing about arrogance is that when we do not spend money to make show, so long as we spend and we're not making a show of it, then we're able to guard ourselves, you know. We're not making a show to people that don't have as much. So those are the kind of ways that I believe that we can protect ourselves from arrogance. But remember again that the dua is really very, very important. I hope that helped. I need to plug my device just to look. Okay, I'm back. Okay, alhamdulillah, rabbil alamin. Okay, I'm happy that helped. Okay, so Sister Taiba is back here. So let me jump to her we're doing questions and takeaways earlier, but you weren't here. So are you ready to share yours? Takeaways from the session and then any questions if you have.
Okay.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum salam wa barakatuh.
Well, I had to step out briefly. I was called upon for something.
Oh, okay.
I just noticed that apart from the avoider, I just have a bit of almost everything. The risk taker, the spender, the saver. But I think at a point, I was more of a spender. I think before responsibilities came in, I just felt, okay, as a salary is coming in, you're just spending. And then before you realize what's happening, the whole money is gone. And then I just realized that, no, this cannot continue this way. So started going, taking risk of going into businesses. I started with Best Spread, with clothing, to CDs, just something to keep the money coming in. And I noticed that my husband is like the opposite of me. He doesn't really like taking all those risks. So he just used to question, as in you just keep doing this, doing that. Which one do you want to do? And at the point, he just had to understand ourselves that, okay, whatever she's doing somehow is bringing in money and it's to everybody's benefit. And I think I started encouraging him. He was helping me to deliver some of my goods. He'll help me to pick them up from the park. And he'll be like, okay, that he's the driver of the business. So I think we were able to like achieve a common ground on that level of finances. Though we are not actually there yet, we still have some of our issues when it comes to personality in terms of finance. We still talk about it, but it's not like an argument or a fight thing now. It's like, okay, this is what I want to do. And alhamdulillah, we've been able to get to that level. But my shortcomings that I actually know that I really need to work on is the saving aspect. So I was able to like do some investments. I'm actually putting my money in like Pearl Cooperative. There's another one, First Paragon. I think I met him through you. We at the seminar he did. So that one too, I started doing. So I consciously am saving towards the future. But that accountability aspect in my business is where I know I'm really lacking. Sometimes I've told myself I'm going to do a photocopy of all the checklists he gave us. Do plenty photocopy every day. Sometimes I'll just finish selling something and I'll go and buy chicken. And cook. I'm just saying myself. Seriously. So that aspect of me is what I really need to work on. I really need somebody to actually train me about it. And in that aspect, my husband is not helping matters because he teases us like that. So that's where I know that I really need to work on, mashallah. Zakallah, Karen.
Oh, mashallah. Thank you for sharing. It shows that, I mean, okay, I remember that. I think you were in one of my classes, right? That you did. You've always been in my classes, yeah. And all those WhatsApp classes. Yes, because I know I've taught this in the past. This money, alhamdulillah, that you've been able to put it to use and you can see that you have results. So, alhamdulillah, think about what you did. I mean, we do it sometimes. I just want to spoil ourselves. Like, oh, I need to reward myself. So, the thing is that one just needs to have agreed beforehand that, okay, even if I make a lot of sales, what I'm taking out is actually what I'm using to pay myself, not like the capital of the business or whatever. But inshallah, in our next session, we're going to cover all this about, you know, saving, budgeting, investment, inshallah. So we'll cover that, inshallah. So thank you very much for sharing. That was really very good. Alhamdulillah. So do you have a question? As in,
no
question. Well, okay, mashallah. Okay. So, okay, thank you very much for sharing that. That's really good. Okay, before I go, okay, I think what I was going to do before was to go back to the slide so that we can, okay, let's see.
I'll take back.
Where is that mute thing again?
Ma? Okay, Ma.
So this is just for us to look at the pros and the cons for, you know, each of the money personalities, and then we can internalize it so that we know what we are up against. Anyway, so for the risk taker, if one is risk taker, we obviously know that it means that despite the fact that you need to be a risk taker to be able to be an entrepreneur or to be able to lead a pack to, you know, to do things better, it's very easy to make a lot of money or to lose a lot of money. So the thing is actually to draw the line and know that you, despite that, yes, you want to make more, you also need to have something set aside for daily needs, such that even if you're going to take a risk, it won't be taking a risk, using everything you have at a time to put it into the basket. So what it means is that for other people, if you are the risk taker in a relationship and the other person is not a risk taker, you definitely will need to let the person, the other party, know that you are willing to draw a line and set aside something that you would not put in your pot of risks. Yeah? And then if the other party is a risk taker, aha, that means you need to come to a joint agreement on how each person on his own or on her own will draw that line such that everything will not go into the risk pot at the same time. Because if anything were to happen at the same time, then there will be a lot of trouble. So for the spender, the spender needs to know that, yeah, it's cool to spend. However, something needs to be put aside as well and not spent. Because when you spend everything at once, okay, it's okay to spend everything at once, but make sure that what you're spending is what you require. For instance, for somebody that runs a business and is a spender, you have to ensure that before the money comes in, you have itemized what the business requires for you to spend on, such that when the money comes and you want to even go hit the shops to buy for the business, you know exactly what you're buying and you buy what is needed, not buying for the sake of buying. And of course, when you do that, you'll be able to put money back into the business by not spending everything. So if you are in a relationship, in relating with the other money personalities, you would have to assure them that, yes, you will have a budget before the money comes, which you will work on sticking with when you want to spend. So that's food for thought. Then for the saver, there's something about saving that, yeah, it's good to save. However, when you save, always remember that sometimes the saving is not real savings. Because when you save because you have a deal of buying 5 packs of cornflakes for the price of 2, and then you find out that you don't finish eating these cornflakes for another 3 months, and then it doesn't taste good again, or probably it expires. So in the long run, you haven't saved anything. So if you're a saver, you need to be sure that you're actually really saving. You're actually really saving. And then when you get a good deal, what happens to the money that you've saved off it? You buy something for $50 instead of $100. What did you do with the $50? If you didn't actually put it to another use, then you really haven't spent it. You really haven't saved it. If you have just spent it on something else that you didn't plan for, you haven't really saved it. So when you save it, you're actually putting it away. So the thing about the saver is that it's not really about saving in a strategic manner. The saver just tries to cut costs in different ways, which might be being frugal, which is good, but too much of it is not either. So in relating with other money personalities, you would need to get to that point that you are willing to also enjoy some good things that are pricey. Not necessarily that you're buying it because you can save from it. And then the security seeker. It's always good to plan for the future. However, you need to enjoy now as well. Enjoy now, because now is really what you have. So while you're planning for the future, still enjoy the moment. So in balancing with the other money personalities, I think that's just what you need to do to make them understand, okay, yes, I look ahead, but then, okay, now I know that I need to enjoy the moment so we can put away some money aside for things we need now and not keep everything for the future. and then the flyer, the avoider. This one is the entire extreme. It's not healthy to avoid money. So this is the one that is entirely extreme. You have to overcome the money baggage that you have here, such that you are able to look money in the eye and then take a stand and do something about it. Because in a relationship, if you avoid money, what it means is that you would even give away your own rights to manage your own money to the other party. And that wouldn't serve you. It wouldn't serve you at all. Because Allah has given you an opportunity to take care of your money, and then you choose to give it away. So anything that happens at the end of the day, you know, anything could happen. Mismanagement, even money being just taken away, stolen, or just spent anyhow just because you have chosen not to take responsibility for it. So it's something that is really at the extreme, and one needs to work on to move away from that extreme. So one should actually think about money, because Allah has even said that we should spend our money. So if you don't take care of your money, you don't talk about money, you don't care about money, how do you even help other people that actually are in need? So I guess this should have added a bit more flesh to how we can live with these money personalities and improve ourselves to get to the next level, and even in our relationships. Okay, so that's it. So any final words before we go off for today? So the homework, our task is, do we have any questions about the activity? Do you have any questions about the activity? We have three things: determine our money personality, and then think about any money conversations you need to have, whether it's in the family, whether it's with your spouse, whether it's at work or whatever. Plan it and then carry it. And of course, as you're doing this, feel free to ask questions or share what's happening, and you know, I can give any other guidance. So do we have any questions as regards that and last minute takeaways? So inshallah, the reason why we're having a break is so that we can commit to the last instructions. No. Okay. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, mashallah. I'll just ask if there were any last minute words. Okay, fine. No questions. Okay, then. So, alhamdulillah, rabbil alameen. So this time around, I would actually expect a submission of, so the personality assessments, I would want you to, you know, post it in group when you've done it, so that we can all, you know, share and just share what our personality as the results are, and then we'll go on from there. Okay. So, subhanaka Allahumma wa bihamdika, ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta, astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. So take care of you, everyone. Assalamu alaikum. Okay.